We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Quiz. We start with a cutting from The Guardian's cinema listings, read by Corrie Caulfield.
Phoenix Cinema, East Finchley, January the 28th, 11 a.m. Milk, parent and baby screening.
And our thanks to Stephen Berry for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Phil Jupitus. And opposite them on my left, David Mitchell and Jeremy Hardy. Francis, who's got four lords a-leaping?
Oh, yes. The real question that this raises is, how stupid do you have to be to become a member of the House of Lords? I think my pet cat could have guessed that this was a set-up, but they didn't suspect a thing. They said, oh, yes, please, bung me some money and I'll put down an amendment. One of them, rather wonderfully, said, rules are meant to be bent. Rather beautifully and poetically. Imagine him lying in the bath at night in his ermine thing. Sing if you're meant to be bent. Just shove some money this way. So they were caught red-handed.
Well, then the alarm bell should have rung, because it was the client. They said this fictitious client wants to open a chain of shops in the UK. Even the Lords must have heard the news that this is not going to go well.
Didn't one of them, or a couple of them, sort of say something like, in reply, said, well, I have to be very careful what I say about this sort of thing. I really have to be very careful. But yes! I usually find it's fine as long as I whisper.
To be fair, it costs a fortune to get into the House of Lords, so by the time you're in, you're going to be completely skinned, aren't you?
I've said it before and I'll say it again. The only peer you can trust, Southend Peer.
That's fair.
I quite like the fact that the Lords Interest Committee are looking into it, because I always thought that the Lords' interests were whist, falconry and a return to feudalism.
I thought the Lord's interest was our salvation.
You of all people!
I quite like the leader of the house, who I have to say I'd never come across before, Baroness Royal.
And she said, and I've got a feeling that she's actually a stealth, extraordinarily right-wing bloke, because it's Baroness Royal of Blaisdon, which is an anagram of SS Roy of all bar one, Basildon.
So you've had a busy week, haven't you?
Sunday Times has accused four Labour peers of being willing to accept cash payments in return for putting down amendments in the House of Lords. In future, peers who break the rules could face a range of punishments, including being woken in the chamber during an afternoon nap. 2 points to Francis. Phil, who's been greasing the wheels of industry?
Mandy is proposing to offer money to the car companies. He's very strict about saying that it's not a bailout. He's just offering this money. He's saying that it's there. The first applicants for it were the Honda Formula One team. When I was reading about the story, it was rather interesting because it said that the car companies are having trouble getting money through normal channels because they have a very poor credit rating. Well, when that happened to me, I would get my mum to sign as a guarantor.
What is the mum or dad of a car company? What sexual act has to happen?
It's a steel foundry and a rubber tree, I think.
Although it goes against the grand query, Lord Mandelson's logic, I think there's a flaw in this because he's going to pay them all this money to keep producing cars, but we're all broke, so nobody can afford to buy a car. Mm.
I think they spotted the massive economic advantage of the fact that the environment's going down the pan. Because essentially the planet will become uninhabitable in a few decades' time, and it doesn't matter how much we're in debt then, we'll never have to pay it back. So let's borrow the money from our children's children's children, who won't ever exist anyway.
Does it produce less carbon if we burn money? Maybe we should do that. I think we should just stop doing everything, because they're inventing money to make things that nobody wants. Presumably nobody really wants to make them, they just want to get paid for making them. So maybe we should all just stop doing everything and just be calm. Maybe the whole world should lie down in a darkened room until the recession is over.
Essentially, that should be the next budget. Let's just give it a year on everything. Just stay where you are.
Exactly.
Don't move. Like, we've nationally dropped a contact lens.
I've got enough tins. I've got enough chickpeas in the back of the cupboard to keep me going for about a year.
Yeah, exactly. Who among us haven't got a load of fuel and guns in the attic?
Don't chickpeas cause methane? I think there could be a flaw in your plan. You eat chickpeas for a year, we'll all know about it.
Yeah, but you could harness that, or you can practice methane capture. with balloons and just be very, very careful.
Then everywhere will look like a child's birthday party.
Exactly.
And the world will be a happier place. With the occasional exploding house with a crazy bean-eating pauper in it.
What is interesting to me about this is my whole life the British car industry has been collapsing. And sort of every week the news is another 4,000 people laid off from the British car industry, another 6,000 people. Vauxhall is halving size again. How big was the British car industry?
This is the car industry's £2.3 billion IOU injection announced by Lord Mandelson. The loan guarantees will last 2 years, or four Mandelson resignations, whichever comes sooner. So 2 points to Phil. David, who wants to turn their patients a healthy shade of green?
I think this is the NHS.
It is, yes.
That are very worried about their carbon footprint and have decided that the problem is the quality of their meals. Because the delicious food that the NHS is producing is unfortunately destroying the planet. So they have to halt the deliciousness. By deliciousness, of course, I mean meat. That no longer will they allow their patients any meat, not even offcuts from other patients.
But they're also encouraging medical staff to work from home. How does that work? You got your appendix out. You've got to pop round to the doctor's. So you can knock you out with a baking tray and see what you can do with the whisk.
It'd be a bit much if you said, I want to have a home birth. The midwife says, that's fine, but you've got to do it at my place because the new minder's on. I haven't got a birthing pool, but there's some Tupperware and a kettle. You'll be all right.
It's a shame that the German government has asked the whole of the country, not just people in hospital, to eat less meat. Have you seen this? That you're only supposed to eat meat in Germany now on a special occasion. I have to say, every time I've been to Germany, it must have been a special occasion. Especially at breakfast. I mean, the whole country's about meat. They've got cities called Hamburger and Frankfurt.
Is that Angela Merkel just appeared on the telly and went, keine Fleisch, bitte. Danke schön.
I consider every meal to be a special occasion, so I'd be absolutely fine.
The NHS has unveiled measures designed to cut its carbon footprint, including meat-free menus, reusing equipment, and telephone consultations. The measures will replace the current strategy to cut emissions, which is death. 2 points there to David. Right. Jeremy, your question is about the Disasters and Emergencies Committee appeal, and Jeremy's answer can be heard in full on ITV Channel 4.
Yeah. I couldn't answer a question on that because people would be confused. They might think, oh, is this the news quiz or is it the news, like they do with appeals and stuff. Like, you know, you get confused, don't you, the public? Like, you see Pingu and you think, oh, is it March of the Penguins? I'm not sure. Plus, we don't want to be seen to take sides. You know, some people are in favour of disasters, you know. I mean, like the tsunami. Some people saw it from the sea's point of view, you know. I've seen little kids throw stones at the sea. It could be provoked. You could see how that could happen.
It didn't make sense, the whole thing, to me. The BBC wouldn't broadcast the Disaster and Emergency Committee's appeal, but they still broadcast quote-unquote. And I think if you're going to...
Which is both a disaster and an emergency.
Exactly.
But not appealing.
It was our boss, wasn't it? Mark Thompson. He took the decision alone himself. I mean, nobody agreed with him, as far as I can see, but he proudly said he was going to stand firm. And as he's our boss, we can't say a word against him. He's a blithering idiot.
It's all because of the blooming Ross thing, isn't it? They've gone into such a tailspin and they're so scared of the Daily Mail attacking them that they're just paralysed but unable to make coherent and sensible decisions on anything now.
I think the irony is, and I think Mark Thompson certainly took the decision with no reference at all to the actual disaster in the Middle East and whether it would help or not, but I'll tell you what, I'll make the decision that will cause the least trouble for the BBC.
That wasn't actually the question that I was going to give you.
Oh, OK, go on then.
Jeremy, why don't Britain add up and spell good?
We've got problems with literacy and numeracy. Of the people who've got a poor GCSE, GCSE, whatever you call O-levels now, result in maths, only 1 in 10 are helped by the government programme. So 1 in 10, so that's like roughly a third. there was a thing about literacy I was interested in a Brokesman interview. He was an expert in language, and he said, we've got to understand that English is a very difficult language to learn. I thought, well, actually, that's true. It is a fantastically difficult language. And the interviewer on the BBC said, but if it's a difficult language to learn, why do people all over the world speak English? And I thought, you haven't read much history, have you? That's why African people went to America, because they just wanted to learn the language. Then they found it was so easy, they had so much time on their hands, they thought, well, we may as well pick some cotton in these plantations.
I liked the fact that the story said, do you suffer from illiteracy? If so, why not email us? Did you know that bees can count up to 4?
Yes.
Yes, which is more than 75% of British adults, apparently.
Well, I think it pretty well qualifies them to be Chancellor of the Exchequer, doesn't it? It's fantastic, but they can't count higher than 4.
Can they actually say 1, 2, 3, 4, or we just think that they...
No, the bee goes, uno, dos, uno, dos, and then they play Woolly Bully by Sam Shamrock Farrow.
Well, you can play dominoes, because they'll give up after 3.
If I'm honest, I think we could beat bees at almost any game. I think what this bees can count to 4 thing, just that I'm not impressed by that. I've always suspected that bees were incredibly stupid, and being told that they can count to 4 and no higher only confirms that view. That I would have no fun spending an evening with a bee trying to chat.
Except, David, that 23.8 million adults in this country struggle with basic maths. I mean, what they're saying is that the British have trouble counting, which...
I'm pretty convinced that there are at least 23 million people in this country I would also find pretty tedious over a whole evening. But if I was stuck with one of them and a bee, I mean, my God, at that point I'm texting myself, saying, oh, it's an emergency.
In 2007, over 50,000 pupils left school without a GCSE in maths, although they did leave with computers, DVD players and the headmaster's car. Francis and Phil have got 4 points, but so too have David and Jeremy.
Now, for the bees listening, the quiz is over.
Yes. We start round 2 with an extract from a University of Nottingham press release.
Worms from the University of Nottingham should be checking in for a flight on board the space shuttle later this year to help researchers investigate the effect of zero gravity on muscle development. Researchers are also hoping to get primary school children involved with the project.
Now, thanks to Alison Goddard for sending us that. Francis, who's been talking rubbish?
It's Peter Jones. He's an advisor to Boris Johnson. A slightly redundant job, I would have thought. An advisor to Boris Johnson on rubbish. And he says that we shouldn't be recycling because no one wants to recycle anything anymore. You know, there are piles of old newspapers and plastic bottles cluttering up China where we send them all, and it'd be a lot simpler to burn our rubbish.
Peter Jones is London...
There's another Peter Jones on Dragon's Den.
Is there? I'm with you, Phil. I thought it was a shop. I thought we must have John Lewis as well. Mind you, for ages I thought J-Lo was some abbreviation for John Lewis, so I...
Isn't the point of a story like that, though, where they're talking about, they're saying, oh, we might as well burn it, then, you know, because actually the recycling is not that environmentally friendly because we're recycling it a long way away. It's actually giving people an excuse not to bother to recycle things. And the big challenge in recycling is to get people to bother to do something which is a bit of a pain in the arse. And if you can get people to do something that's a bit of a pain in the arse, we can make that environmentally friendly in good time. But you have to, everyone has to completely change their culture of dealing with rubbish. And now this story, thanks to the idiot assistant of idiot Mayor of London, now people have got an excuse to say, oh, I might as well just, yeah, set fire to it, you know, chuck it in the bin with the rest of the turds.
I know Lambeth Council are quite strict about you separating your turds out from your other rubbish.
Peter Jones is London Waste Advisor. I preferred the old title, Artistic Director of Tate Modern. He has suggested that much of the country's waste should simply be burnt to generate electricity, as long as your household rubbish is mainly coal.
So, on the subject of Dragon's Den, the thing that really annoys me about Dragon's Den is dragons don't have dens, they have lairs. Lions have dens. It should be
That's
called Dragon's Lair.
Annoys you most about Dragon's Den. Probably not watched it all the way. Hey, did you see this thing about Colchester Council and one of its recycling sacks? Did anybody see this?
Oh, yes, they've turned up on donkeys in Spain.
I'm going to give you an extra point for this, yes.
They produce these really tough sacks for garden waste, and they're so good and strong and tough, and they were giving them away free, that people from all over the world came and nicked them, and they've now been used as saddlebags in Spain.
Yeah.
Pedro, you must go to Colchester. When you get there, go to the back gardens of the people. There you will find, on spoken bounty. And here in Spain, the earwig can count to five.
Colchester Council was astonished when one of its recycling sacks handed out free to citizens turned up on the back of a donkey 1,000 miles away in Spain. The recycling sack from Essex was spotted drinking excessively, urinating in the street and making no attempt to speak the local language. Tim Young of Colchester Council said, "I've seen it all now." Do you not think he needs to get out of Colchester? David, which political geezer has been left out in the cold?
This is Iceland, is it?
Sounds... Oh, the Prime Minister, the government of Iceland has fallen.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah, well, the Prime Minister of Iceland, who's actually ill, as part of anything else, has been driven out of power by riots because the entire Icelandic economy has collapsed because their banks had lent 400 times as much money as everyone in that country would earn every year, you know, forever. It's all worked out by some bloke in Britain. Yes, Iceland, obviously, their banks have collapsed, their currency's collapsed, and now their government has collapsed. It's the first government to fall as a result of the credit crunch. But
have you not seen the new Prime Minister?
Mm.
They've got this air hostess called Johanna.
Johanna Sigurðardóttir.
She's the first openly gay Prime Minister anywhere in the world in history.
Mm. She was previously Iceland's Minister for Sensible Shoes.
Yeah. I think it's sort of very interesting why suddenly, after all these centuries, we now have, you know, black American president and gay prime ministers and things. All the glass ceiling has been shattered just at the moment when the world is collapsing, so that then they can take the blame for everything. And in a few years' time, the normal, conventional, traditional politicians will come out of hiding and say, "Yes, we thought it was a bad idea, but we thought we'd give them a chance. Now let us take over."
Yeah, all we have to do now is legalise dope and Daily Mail readers will start spontaneously combusting on the street.
What can I say? More Scandinavian lesbians in charge. It's worth the world. Anyway.
You're going to make a bid for the Isle of Man now.
Sandy, I'm sure it's just a phase. Probably just haven't met the right bloke.
Well, I have. It's Phil, but he's not interested. The whole Iceland thing, I didn't understand. Does anybody else understand this whole thing about offshore financial services? Does it not sound like mortgages for whales and cod?
I don't understand anything to do with banking or the financial sector or why banks have collapsed or why a country like Iceland became very rich even though no one was doing anything except putting numbers on a screen and they thought that would work forever. And I was very happy not understanding that until the point a few months ago when it turned out that none of the bankers understood that either.
Iceland's Prime Minister, Geir Hardy, didn't he start the Labour Party? Iceland's Prime Minister, Geir Hardy, has become the first world leader to leave office as a result of the global recession. The government has been officially dissolved. It's probably one of those really hot springs. At the end of round two, the scores are David and Jeremy have got 8 points, but Francis and Phil are in the lead with 9. Before we start round three, here is a cutting from this week's Radio Times.
BBC 7, 1:30 p.m. A Short History of Ireland, Part 1 of 120.
And our thanks to Maxine Wicks of Bristol for spotting that. Francis, whose brain train turned out to be a brain drain?
When I was a boy, we exercised our brains because in those days we had things like sines and logarithms. Mm. So we spent many happy hours looking at log tables, which don't seem to exist anymore, and playing with slide rules and reading books. But now you don't have to do that. You sit on the sofa and it's all electronic. There are these Nintendo DS, I think they're called, which have brain games. And then you have when you want some exercise, you pick up your Wii controller and do a little game on that. And it turns out they're no good for you.
The study didn't cover everything. It said that Nintendo are no better than a pencil. Well, they're certainly worse when it comes to getting wax out of your ears. I don't... anybody played with one of these?
I had a go on one of the Nintendo thing, and the first go, my mental age was about 54,
yeah.
And then it went down to about 36, which is, you know, nearly as low a mental age as I actually am in age, and as any bee would tell me after 5 billion more years of evolution. I thought it was quite fun, actually. And in fact, the survey, they said it's no better than playing noughts and crosses or doing a crossword or playing Scrabble or whatever, but To be honest, it's not pretending to be any better than that. They've found a way of expensively making a machine to do something that a piece of paper did before. That's how the economy works. The last thing we want to do is start abandoning that. We all need to spend money needlessly quickly.
I did skiing on a Wii the other week, and it was actually really good, because it's not dangerous and you don't have to go anywhere cold.
I go around Jeremy's house, I charge him 12 quid for hot chocolate.
It would be embarrassing if your wife ran away with a Wii instructor, though, wouldn't it?
Researchers from the University of Rennes say that the Nintendo Brain Trainer is no better for training the brain than using a pencil and paper. Nicole Kidman has endorsed the Nintendo Brain game, but then she previously endorsed Tom Cruise. According to recent research, Tom Cruise's acting is no better than that provided by pencil and paper. 2 points to Francis. Phil, who says, if you've got a good name, milk it?
They have decided, some, you know, researcher has decided that apparently you get more milk out of cows if you give them names. Mm. So what you do basically is you increase the cow's self-esteem by by giving them a name, like Thunder Cow the Mighty, producer of many, many gallons.
I quite like this. I think it'd be quite sweet to buy a bottle of milk that said Love from Daisy.
But if you have bottles of milk that are sort of signed by a cow, aren't they going to start putting notes like, do you know what happened to my children? I was producing all this milk, you know, primarily for my children, who seem to have disappeared. And farmer's terribly nice, calls me Ermentrude and everything. Can't possibly be him, could it?
If you feed the cows lots of bananas, you get banana milkshake? Mm.
Well, a study by Newcastle University...
Answer me, Toxie!
I have no idea.
I think if you feed cows lots of bananas, they die. They've got a weird system about 9 stomachs that's specially designed for eating grass. If you put bananas in that, I mean, they're going to explode, aren't they?
That's a great show.
A study by Newcastle University has found that cows given names produce an average of 454 more pints of milk a year than anonymous cows. Well, that'd be scary if you got a bottle of milk said, from anonymous. Yes, indeed. Cows with a name produce more milk. Presumably, cows with an email address can put their feet up and order it from Tesco's. 2 points to Phil. Jeremy, have a listen to this.
That's one of the sexiest things I've ever
Radio 3 After Dark. For the discerning BBC listener.
I've only ever heard the instrumental version of that before.
What musical condition has been exposed as a load of balls?
Well, who would have thought that for years men have been worried about catching cello scrotum because it's in some medical book, only to find out that it was all a prank as a result of a letter written in 1974. I'm not an expert in playing the cello, but clearly playing the cello is not going to irritate your scrotum. Fiddling can, yes. Plus, how do you tell if your scrotum is irritated? I mean, of your skin... It's the part of your skin that does you the least credit, isn't it, really? You want something to...
I don't know.
Well, let's just say, on Keith Richards, a scrotum doesn't look out of place. On most people, you think, what on earth has gone wrong there? That person needs something to reduce the appearance of fine lines.
I don't quite follow your reasoning, though, that because the scrotum is ugly, it is impossible for it to become sort of irritated or painful.
Well, it could do. It wouldn't look any worse, would it?
But that's not the only concern. I mean, if you follow that to its logical conclusion, it doesn't matter what happens to any of your internal organs, because you can't see them.
Exactly.
I've got liver failure, but frankly, I'm still looking great.
So. No, because you go a bit yellowy with liver failure.
Ah, right, that's the only problem.
Yeah. Other than that, it's all right. Yeah.
Dr. Elaine Murphy has admitted that she faked a letter to the British Medical Journal over 30 years ago in which she described a painful condition known as cello scrotum. Although Dr. Murphy wrote the letter in 1974, her husband John actually signed it. Women weren't allowed to sign letters until 1978.
Do you think there are cellists that are now going to be depressed because they've all their lives they've counted themselves lucky that they weren't afflicted by cello scrotum? They thought, well, you know, many things have gone wrong. My marriage fell apart. But as a cellist, of course, it would have been a nightmare if I'd had that terrible and common disease, cello scrotum. I'm blessed with an extremely robust scrotum, unaffected by this problem. So that's what really gets me through the day. You know, whenever I stare down the barrel of that gun, I go, no, no, I will keep on living because I am not afflicted with cello scrotum. And then suddenly you discover it doesn't exist.
But what about all the cellists who do have unsavoury genitalia? They're going to have to find another explanation now, aren't they?
Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Mr. Ween.
Special thanks to Charlotte Hartill of Bristol, who's 13 years old, who sent this in to me. It's from the Daily Mail. Police in Nigeria are holding a goat on suspicion of armed robbery. Vigilantes saw some hoodlums attempting to rob a car. One escaped, while the other turned into a goat.
Many thanks to Jeff Kirk of Dublin for sending this one in, which is all about the headline. A Chinese tycoon was yesterday sentenced to 12 years in prison after falsifying information, and the headline is Chinese fridge magnet jailed.
David.
Well, many thanks to John Porter of Henley-on-Thames in Oxfordshire for this, and this is from the Henley Standard. The demonstration led by Town Councillor Barry Wood is demanding that South Oxfordshire District Council reverses its decision to grant Diamonds and Pearls a licence. I'm not a prude or a Puritan. I have been to strip clubs and enjoyed them, but I don't want my face rubbed in it.
Jeremy.
This is sent in by Dr. Jane Potter, and it's an internal email from the university. Following maintenance provided by external contractors, computing services have been unable to restart the uninterruptible power supply unit.
Let's take a look at the final score. David and Jeremy have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Francis and Phil with 13. A stern warning from Radio 4 Continuity about Thursday's afternoon play.
Listeners should be aware that the play contains scenes of a sexual nature and the music of James Blunt.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Ween, Phil Jupiters, David Mitchell and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig and the news was read by me, Corrie Caulfield. The chair's script was written by Simon Littlefield, Rodri Crooks and Stephen Carlin, with additional material by James Sherwood and Matt Charlton. The producer was Victoria Lloyd.